don't know. Are we dropping it again, Jesus? Your call. No, that looks like. Oh. Anna gets offended if we don't drop the
No, it's not that I get offended. It's that it's just that, you know, it's just hour two. So like it's up in the air. Are we gonna drop it? Hey, Jesus, let's ask
no,
you.
No, the
you
question like is it really not? A different panel, or did we already do that in the beginning of the show?
It's always a different panel.
Is it really a different panel? I mean, we got rid of two people and we brought in two different people.
This guy,
but I know, but it's like starting like it's like doing the intro to the Conan O'Brien show every time he brings on a new guest. Like, let's do it again. Whatever.
No, you're being ridiculous. Anyway.
Okay, all right. Avery Allen, everybody!
Hi.
And that girl over there.
The disrespect, huh? The disrespect.
Yes, on the daily.
All right. Okay, fine. The lovely and brilliant Anna Kasparian, okay?
Women's Day is over, you know.
Okay? Yeah. We're going to have to keep it up all week.
Yeah.
Long Jesus.
Yeah, you guys got to give us more reasons why we get together next year.
We
for
gave
one.
You Wednesday. Jesus.
You gave.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
That is it's such a male perspective, right? I'm obsessed now with this thing where, like, that Fox's show Outnumbered. Is theoretically a show about women. There's four women and then one male guest.
Yeah.
But it's from the perspective of a male. That's why it's called Outnumbered, right? If it was from the perspective of women, it would be appropriately numbered.
Yeah.
If it was from the perspective of women, it wouldn't be on their network.
that's another great point.
Yeah.
All right, let me read some tweets real quick. Dan Steele, so I just found out my dad is also a TYT viewer. We were both watching and totally unaware that the other was watching too. That's awesome. So To Dan Steele, well, I don't know if they're juniors here. Anyway, God bless both of you. I was doing a TYT YouTube live over the weekend, last weekend, and there was a guy watching the YouTube live while I was doing it. And he turned around and he's like, wait, what? That is so cool. Anyways, Naveen writes in, if Paul Ryan is the brains of the Republican Party, I don't want to know what the rest of the body's like. And I am so.
Well, hopefully, it's like Paul Ryan's body. That guy's built, man. Sexy.
Ah, yeah. Lifting those, doing those curls on the cover. Okay.
Gross.
I am Sock writes in about Donald Trump's reading pile. It's only a matter of time before someone puts an Onion article in that stack.
All right, totally.
Yeah. And you think he won't believe it?
Mm-hmm.
He'll be tweeting like a madman, like, this is outrageous.
He doesn't know what the Onion is. Yeah, no way.
No way. All right, donors to the journalism campaign. Gerald from Hawaii, $100. Thank you, Gerald. And Aaron from Vermont, $250. So bless your heart. I mean, the fact that you guys are given. I mean, that is a lot of money. Thank you.
Wow.
Thank
$2,971. Right? Is that right? Sorry. What do we need? Where am I wrong? Yeah, $2,971, right? We need.
To get to 1.4.
Yeah.
Can we see that by the end of the show? It's an outrageous request. Can
$2,971.
All right. I'll read more names a little bit later in the show. All right, Anna, you are our leader in this hour, so please lead.
Okay. All right. A Republican congressman has decided to basically voice the concerns or non-concerns of the country's poor by assuming that they don't really care about health insurance. They don't really want health insurance. Now, during a recent press conference, he was asked about the issue of Medicaid. And when he was answering the question, here's what he said. Just like Jesus said, the poor will always be with us. There is a group of people that just don't want health care and aren't going to take care of themselves. Now, who would be dumb enough to say that? Representative Roger Marshall, he's actually a brand new congressman. He got elected in November, and he is part of, or a member of, the GOP Doctors Caucus.
Yeah.
Anyway, he says now, more, but we'll get to that in a second.
All right, there's two parts of that that are unbelievable. So who could possibly believe that, guys? Really, even if you're a right winger, you think poor people don't want health care? Like, and so that what? They could die?
Their kids could get sick and die?
I mean, what? Yeah, come on, guys. Okay. Now, look, if he were to say something like bring that down 80% and say something like, hey, I wish some folks would take better care of themselves. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, people that are in a bad socioeconomic status don't come in for checkups nearly as much as they need to. Mm-hmm. Like, you could say, hey, maybe that's a stereotype, but nobody's going crazy over that comment, right? Okay, I get it, and I wish some people took care of this. But to say that they don't want healthcare is nuts. What if they get cancer? No, nah, I'm poor. I don't want healthcare. Like, I like dying. My kid, you know, people, it's like they, when their view of the poor is bums, right? Like,
yes.
Oh, they're just bums, you know, and they're living off of us. No, people making $28,000 a year have a real job, right? And they're poor. And if their kids get cancer, yes, they want healthcare. They want healthcare.
Joe Sandberg from Aspiration.com was on the show. We did a financial show with him this week, Cenk, you and I did. 75% of the country cannot handle a $700 financial shock.
Right.
Mm-hmm. $700. So you think they're not trying? They're doing everything they can, and they're terrified that that they're going to have to pay a $1,000 deductible. So yeah, so maybe they don't go.
Yeah, I think that, you know, some of the comments that he said later kind of highlight what you mentioned, Cenk. Like, they think of poor people as bums. They think of poor people as individuals who have no interest in taking care of themselves, right? So let me give you those comments because I think they're important. He says, morally, spiritually, socially, the poor, including the homeless, just don't want health care.
Sure.
The Medicaid.
Wait, can I just say, what does that mean?
What does that even mean, right?
How does someone morally not want health care? Like, oh, I got a heart attack, but spiritually, I'm not interested in healthcare.
Did you quote, and I'm sorry, Anna, but I was making the note, but did you quote the exact beginning of his quote where he says, just like Jesus said?
Yes. Yeah, I did.
Because first of all, there's no relation to what comes after. It's just a way of saying, I have to pretend I'm Christian, so I'm going to say the word Jesus,
right. And
then I'm going to tell you how horrible the poor are.
I actually think it's a little bit worse than that.
Please.
Because he said, just like Jesus said, the poor will always be with us. That's a way of saying, like, they're always going to be with us. Well, there's nothing you can do about it.
Like,
you know, right? No, Jesus said the opposite, that you should spend all of your time taking care of the poor.
Right.
Jesus didn't say the poor are always going to be with us, so let's not give them health care.
Maybe he stopped reading after the poor episode.
We should highlight Jesus' words in red and then his in black, because there's no context. Right, and I think the issue always with conservatives is that their legislation is always accompanied by some kind of moral judgment, right? This idea that poverty is a choice, which is not true, and it totally obscures the ways in which they've contributed to poverty through their policies. So I think this whole thing is flawed, and let's leave Jesus out of it.
Yeah, and later on he clarified that comment.
I think his clarification is worse.
It's bad. Right, let me just finally get to the part that I think is the most relevant. Okay. Right. He says the Medicaid population, which is on a free credit card as a group, do probably the least preventative medicine and taking care of themselves and eating healthy and exercising. And I'm not judging. I'm just saying socially, that's where they are. Okay, so I want to stop there because I think that is so indicative of what right-wingers think of the poor. Like, they're lazy, they're slobs, they don't take care of themselves, they don't diet, they don't exercise, they don't do this, they don't do that. And so, first of all, that is a gross generalization, right, to assume they don't want preventative care. A lot of people don't get the preventative care that they need because they literally cannot afford it. Just going to a doctor for an annual checkup, if you do not have health insurance, is a very costly thing to do. And so, yeah, a lot of people in this country are unhealthy, don't get the preventative care that they need, not because they don't want preventative care, but because they simply don't have access to it. To assume that they're all lazy bums who don't want to eat healthy and they don't want to live, you know, better lives is absolutely ridiculous. And it just shows the disdain that people like him have for the disadvantaged.
So I think his clarifications are worse. So first, they're like, hey, I mean, you took Medicaid patients. And he's like, yeah, no, I did. He's like, patients would drive over 100 miles to see me because we're in Kansas.
Because they didn't care about taking care of themselves. They drove 100 miles.
Yeah, I thought they spiritually didn't mind not having health care. Instead, it turns out they drove 100 miles to see you.
Sure.
You want to go take care of this cold, or you want to just sit on the couch, eat a bunch of Cheetos? You know?
And visiting the doctor is a hardship for poor people, right? Mm-hmm. It takes time that they often don't have from work, and sometimes the access of transportation to get, like, preventative care it's taxing, and it's easier if you live a privileged life and you have the time and the space
and the gas
and the access, right, to get to the doctor.
You just brought up such an important point, and this is an ongoing thing that, you know, we complain about during our production meetings, because oftentimes there's at least one person missing from a production meeting because you have to book appointments with your doctor during the work week,
right,
during the hours of 9 to 5 when everyone's working, right? Mm-hmm. And so we're privileged because we're able to take that time off or take that time away to do our appointments with the doctor and then come back to work. Right. But most people, especially those who are working part-time jobs or minimum wage jobs, don't have that luxury.
Yeah, and so I want to go back to Jesus for a second.
Because okay.
And look, so many of this is so much of this is absurd. And don't get me wrong, I'm not over romanticizing the poor. Guys who are poor who don't go to the doctor enough and do preventative care, even though some of them have access to it? Sure, of course.
Right.
But so there are also people who are middle class and rich that do that.
Yeah, I mean,
right. So and the guy in this Marshall character says, these poor, they don't take care of themselves until their arms are chopped off or they got pneumonia and then they go to the ER. No, if they have cancer, they would like, they can't go to the ER. They would like to regularly get treatment. They don't want to just, you know what, I'll just die. Go ahead, Marshall. You're better than me. Let me just die, right?
You know what the ER is for? If somehow your arm gets chopped off, you go to the ER. Right? Yeah. That's what it's for. I don't know.
And if it's a guy that he somehow associates with, a rich guy, a white guy, oh my God, your arm was chopped off. Let's get you to the ER.
Right.
He sees a poor guy with his arm chopped off. There he goes.
He chose to get his arm.
That arm was probably halfway cut off last week.
Exactly. Why didn't you come in?
I would put my privileged laziness against any poor person. I really would. can we get graphic one ready again? That's the guy. Because I think it's time for a little Ben Mankiewicz seemingly trivial but secretly spot-on analysis.
You should do a segment, a branded segment.
Don't trust anyone who puts their own name on their golf shirt.
Oh my God.
It's a good lesson. It'll serve you well as you go through life. This has been a seemingly trivial but spot-on piece of analysis from Ben Mankiewicz.
Well, that's preventative care of his, of his attire. Like, he just wants to make sure he never loses it. Preventative care.
Yeah. You know? He never has to wear goes to a party, doesn't have to put on a tag.
He doesn't go to parties.
Okay. And now I return to Jesus. Mm-hmm. So he said, in order to try to clarify the Jesus comment, he said, when I said the poor will always be with us, it was actually in the context of supporting the obligation we have to always take care of people. Because we cannot completely craft a larger affordable healthcare policy around a comparatively small segment of the population who will get care no matter what. In other words, look, it's in the context of like, no, of course we have an obligation to the poor. But what are we gonna do, craft healthcare around them? No, I mean, we don't have that much of an obligation. No, we're going to leave them out in the cold, and they're going to get to go to the ER right before they die. So I think Jesus is on my side. I think I'm proving my case here. They claim that they're religious people.
No.
They claim that they believe in family values. They claim they've read the Bible.
I don't know much about Jesus, but I do know that he would wear a golf shirt that said on it, Jesus. Yeah.
And if you were unclear, Jesus of Nazareth.
Jesus of Nazareth.
Okay, FYI, not one of those poser Jesuses.
All right, there's more Jesus talk in the next
one. Oh, thanks, God.
You excited, Cenk?
Yes.
Okay, yes. All right. The Public Religion Research Institute recently polled Americans of different religious backgrounds to see what they think about religious discrimination here in the United States. And the results are actually pretty interesting and surprising. Now, what the pollsters wanted to do was compare discrimination, or at least perceptions of discrimination, against Christians versus Muslims. And the vast majority of people who were polled did believe or agree that Muslims are discriminated against more compared to Christians, except for one group, one demographic. Now, overall, people were twice as likely to say Muslims face discrimination as they were to say the same thing about Christians. Now, the people who stuck out, whose perceptions were radically different from others in the survey, were white evangelical Protestants. Among this group, 57% said there's a lot of discrimination against Christians in the US today. Only 44% said the same thing about Muslims.
It's my favorite story in a long time. Mm. It's so great. And thank you, John Gibson and Bill O'Reilly, all you clowns for years talking about the war on Christmas. Like, it worked. You got the least victimized people in the world, except maybe for like Saudi princes, to believe that they are the subject of discrimination and that they are the victims in today's America.
Yeah. Now, the good news is white mainline Protestants Rock and roll, just right at exactly the national average, 63% saying yes, Muslims are discriminated, only 30% saying that about Christians, 2-1 margin. White Catholics, even higher, 64-26. So I'm going to say the most obvious thing in the world, this isn't about white folks, this isn't about Christians. It is this particular subculture of evangelicals who've been taught a certain thing. And by the way, they are more prone to propaganda because they're the ones who believe whatever my pastor tells me that God says, including about how he has to get rich and fly around in private jets I paid for, I believe it unquestioningly, right? So I believe that I am the victim, even though I have every advantage in America, and that it's those dastardly Muslims that somehow, what, have power or privilege in America? Can anybody make that case? Apparently they think they can.
I know. What's incredible, though, is prior to the election, a larger percentage of them believed that Muslims were discriminated against versus today, right? So let me give you those numbers. I thought that was interesting. Graphic 10. When this question was asked in a December 2013 PRRI survey, 59% of white evangelicals said they think Muslims face a lot of discrimination. As late as last October, 56% said this was the case. As of February, though, that number had dropped by 12 percentage points.
So all the way from 59 to 44. Mm-hmm. Why? Because they're so prone to propaganda. As soon as the dear leader, Donald Trump, said, no, Muslims don't get discriminated against, they go, okay, that's it, Muslims don't get discriminated against. Even though nearly 60% of them believed that just 3 years ago, 4 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. And so they switched on a dime. Now, you want to know the reality. 22% of religiously motivated crimes are against Muslims, even though they are less than 1% of the population.
Right. Right. And if you want to compare that to Christians, Catholics that have been discriminated against or are victims of hate crimes, that number is 13.6%. And of course, they account for a larger percentage of the population.
They account for over 70%
of the largest percentage of the population.
Yeah. By the way, the group that's not in this study, but in other studies, the group that gets the most amount of hate crimes, religiously motivated hate crimes, are Jews in America.
Why are we, man? We talked about it in an earlier segment. Our propaganda is horrible. I mean, they crush us. They crush us. They did this. It worked. They talked about the war on Christmas. We mocked it. We make fun of it. We're like, they're an idiot. But it. I mean, I don't know whether it came first. I don't know whether these people already felt victimized and that played into it. But my hunch is that stuff like that helped craft this idea that the world that you knew and grew up in and felt safe from and were protected from uppity women and black people and Muslims and people who were just coming to take from you the things that were rightfully yours, that has been fostered by stuff like the war on Christmas.
Sure. So, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead.
I think it's also more than propaganda. It's just the visibility of Muslims and Islam as a legitimate religion. Some Christians experience that as a decentering, right? And they experience that decentering as being marginalized or oppressed themselves, which is false. And I think it also obscures the fact that there are Christians actually being persecuted, like really persecuted in other spaces. Mm-hmm. Because this isn't persecution. This isn't discrimination. I think it's just having to reconcile the visibility of other religions in this pluralistic society that we say we live in.
That's a good point.
Let me add on top of that, because that's such a great point. So when ISIS kills Christians, that's discrimination, right? So now it doesn't have to be that level for it to be discrimination.
Sure.
There's discrimination against Christians where they are the minorities in a lot of different places throughout the world. There isn't that much discrimination against Christians in America because they're the majority. It makes sense, right? But they view it as, for example, the 2015 Supreme Court decision that legalized gay marriage, that is the thing that they cite most often as, you see how we're victimized.
Right.
Wait, so let's just understand this right. Because gay couples get to have the same rights as straight couples, that they have the same constitutional rights, evangelical Christians look at that and go, oh, they took my right to discriminate against you away. They took my right to be above you away from me.
Right.
I'm a victim.
Sure.
I mean, you want to talk about a special snowflake. These guys, if you tell them something pleasant like happy holidays, they think they're a victim.
Yeah.
If you say, hey, congratulations, you get equal rights, they think they're a victim.
So in their view, marriage is this religious sacred thing. And, you know, same-sex marriage is against all of that and allowing gay couples to get married goes against their religion, and that's attacking their religion in some way. Like, that's the line of reasoning they have, which is ridiculous. And look, we live in a country that is supposed to believe in a separation of church and state, meaning you are free to practice your religion in any way you please, but you're not allowed to allow, or you're not allowed to have your religion dictate the lives of other people, right? So yeah, same-sex couples get to get married. That is a civil rights issue. That is not a religious issue. In this country, it is not a religious issue, and it should never be a religious issue.
If you don't believe in gay marriage, then don't get gay married.
Right, but what do we do, man? Like, again, so what do we do? Because we're gonna hear from a lot of people sort of who like to think of themselves on the left, but are really either on the right or at best in the center. We're gonna say, hey, as we've heard, we didn't listen to these people in 2016. We ignored them. Like, you know, like we gotta go back and listen to, great, okay, oh, this is what I need to. But we have to win. We gotta win, because when we don't win, Roger Marshall is in Congress, and worse than Roger Marshall in Congress, because he's always gonna be in Congress from Kansas. There's 272 other guys just like Roger Marshall,
sure,
and 54 of them in the Senate, or 52 right now. So I don't know, man. I don't know what you're supposed to do. I don't know how much catering you have to do to say, hey, you're not getting discriminated against, but I what? Understand that you feel that somehow that gay people getting married is a, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
The narrative of we haven't listened to these folks, I feel like, because we were actively shaming. Yeah. We were actively shaming things that need to be shamed.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't think that everyone has a fair claim to arguing what's right. Some things are just wrong. So I think when we try to give credence to every voice needs to be recognized the same way, then we do a disservice to.
I do, but how do we make sure? I don't know. And maybe an answer could be shame louder. Maybe it is. But I want to win badly, and I don't want to be in this position longer than the second we have to be in this position.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let me answer your question to the best of my ability.
Right.
Okay, which is really high. Okay, so first of all, don't worry about the evangelical voters. 81% of them voted for Trump. They're gone. They're not going to vote for most Democrats. Costing yourself votes from other sections of the population to try to appease evangelical voters is not a smart political strategy. Okay. Second of all, their numbers are dwindling. Among the older groups, even they're becoming less religious. Among younger evangelicals, you know why they get their news online? I'm not just talking about us. I'm talking about Google. I'm talking about Facebook. So those guys, we're winning with them. They don't believe that gay marriage is a problem at all, even among evangelical white voters. So your old, antiquated, hateful ways, sad day for you. You couldn't even get your kids to hate. So we're going to win on that in the long run. And yes, half of Trump voters, including a lot of the evangelical voters, are the basket of deplorables. So we should shame them. Yes, there's nothing wrong with that. Say, hey, listen, if you're a Republican, you're more likely to be stupid and ignorant. That's okay. So when you pull that lever, just know you're voting for ignorance. You're voting against science. You're voting against facts, against reason. Okay, raise your hand. Say, I'm with the stupid party, right? That's, you know how there was Hillary Clinton, I'm with her? Mm-hmm. They should do, I'm with stupid. Right? And so you know, part of the reason you do that is not to feel better, but to, so that when they're like, hey, wait, because they did all this thing. It's like, wait, there's a war on Christmas. They're coming against Jesus. And it made them pause. It made them think about that. And I want them to pause when they go to vote for a Republican. Wait, am I stupid? And the answer is probably, right? So think about that and actually do your research. Actually, you know what you might want to do? It's talk to your kids. Because in the reality, it's not that they're more stupid. We're all humans. It's that they're more ignorant.
I think what I worry about, though, is it's not just the evangelicals that fall victim to the ridiculous propaganda that you see on social media a lot these days, right? Like the war on Christmas stuff, I know a lot of moderate Christians, right? They're not even really practicing Christians that get fired up about that issue, right?
I'm going to win on that. Okay, I'm serious. Okay, so in the past, all they had was their preachers and stupid TV. Mm-hmm. Stupid TV that doesn't want to offend anybody, right? So I'm going to keep on saying that being gay in the Bible is just as bad as eating shrimp, because that is 100% true, and I want you to read your own Bible, okay? Until people go, okay, Cenk, I got it, man. You and all the damn liberals and progressives that forced me to read my Bible and realize how ignorant I am. It turns out eating shrimp is just as bad as being gay. So if we're not making eating shrimp illegal, we're not taking away their rights. You're right, we shouldn't take the rights away from gay people too. We're gonna win on that because we're right.
Oh, or, my God, they're gonna make shrimp illegal. Or you gotta be careful.
Either they make shrimp illegal or they think, you know what, I love shrimp. I'm gonna go blow Larry.
Either way, mission accomplished.
That's right. Either way,
mission. I will say to your point that in terms of church,
which one? The one about Larry?
No, about getting blown. To your point about the expansion of evangelicals in terms of church membership, that group of Christians is actually in decline in terms of church membership. They're the most homogenous, but other denominations of Christianity are actually expanding and growing. So there is hope. That among Christians, that we're expanding in a way that is more diverse, and these other denominations that are less diverse, that are more homogenous, are shrinking, like the evangelicals. I think that is hopeful.
Well, you know, you guys make a similar point then that, like, in the long run, the things are with us. But in the long run, the question is still then, how long is that race? Is that race 4 years? Is that race 8 years? If that race is 16 years, I'm not prepared to wait out the end of that.
No, it's 4 years. I guarantee it.
I hope so. Okay. Yeah, I hope.
Just because it's too related, I gotta tell you guys one other story real quick. So the Public Religion Research Institute asked people, when violence is done in the name of Islam, a Muslim guy says, Allahu Akbar, I did it for Islam, do you believe them? Americans are great, because I think this is kind of open-minded. 50% of them said, no, they're not doing it in the name of Islam. It's just a lunatic guy, and it's not Dylann Roof doing it for white people, and it's not that Muslim guy doing it for Allah, right? Mm-hmm. 50% say, no, they're doing it for the name of Allah. Now, when a Christian says, I'm doing this for the Lord Jesus Christ, and I'm gonna kill these people, do you believe them? Then 75% of Americans go, no, not in the name of Christianity. So it's a little skewed, yes, they don't believe it when it comes to Christians. They believe it a little bit more when it comes to Muslims. But I'm gonna call that mixed news. It could have been worse, right? But when it comes to white evangelical voters, here we go again, right? If a Christian terrorist does a violent act in the name of Christianity, 87% of them said, no, I don't believe him. That's not, no true Scotsman would do that. No true Christian would do that. Of course it's not in the name of Christianity. No, Christianity is great. And they asked the same group, white evangelical voters. They said, okay, or just white evangelicals period in America. If a Muslim terrorist does something and says it's in the name of Allah, 44% of them said, no, that doesn't necessarily represent the whole religion. The rest of them, the majority is like, yeah, of course, Islam. That's, of course, that represents Islam. Right? So when my guy does it, no, it says nothing about my religion. No. When their guys do it, that's their religion. That's how it is. So look, I guess the numbers could be even worse. They could be more skewed. But in that demographic of white evangelicals, they can do no wrong. And the other guy, more than half the time, can do no right.
Yeah. We're just all animals. And we're tribalistic. And war against tribes, that's all this is.
Yeah, I hear you, but some are more tribalistic than others, and they're called conservatives.
Yes, I know that. Are more evolved than others, let's just put it that way.
Yeah, and to be fair, look, you're right. Like, let me actually amend that. We are all tribal, you're right, Anna. And I'm not even sure the conservatives are more so. It's just a definition of what's your tribe. So conservatives view their tribe as the people in their immediate vicinity that they identify with, either their local town, their church, or evangelicals, or white people, or whatever it might be. However, and they're all different, right? Not all conservatives viewed in terms of white people. No, not at all. But whatever they feel is their community, it might be as small as their family. Whereas progressives view their tribe as all of humanity. So that's why they're much more open to different countries, more immigration, African Americans, Mexican Americans, Muslim Americans, because they view that as, wait, that's us, that's our tribe, right? Whereas conservatives have a smaller tribe. And within their tribe, they're actually pretty good to one another. They're not core evil, that's silly, right? And the people who they go to church with, they're pretty nice. They probably gossip a little bit, right? But overall, pretty decent.
We all gossip.
Right? Mm-hmm. But to the outsiders, right? But it's just a definition of what you view as part of your tribe and what the others are.
Yep. Should we take a break?
All right, let's take a break.
Yeah, let's take a break. When we come back, I have some fun stories, the funnest stories of the day. You don't want to miss it.
Oh, we got to do the orgasm story.
We've done a billion orgasm stories.
No, but it's so good. All right, let's see what happens when we come back. Young Turks, there's so many good tweets, but we only have time for a couple. Leanne writes in, equality always feels like discrimination when you're among the privileged. Because in some ways they're taking, you know, you're in a relative sense, mm-hmm. you've lost some of your power, mm-hmm. right? That doesn't mean it's the right thing, but that's why it feels that way. Great point, Leanne. Rain Mirren writes in, to Roger Marshall, Proverbs 14:31. Anyone who oppresses the poor is insulting God who made them. To help the poor is to honor God. Okay.
A lot of ways to interpret that.
And then this is one of my favorite. The Drunken Monk writes in, poverty can be a choice, but very few make that choice, like monks and also Jesus. So I wish I'd made that point. Drunken Monk, such a great point. So Roger Marshall would have cut healthcare for Jesus. Mm-hmm. And he would say, well, I mean, he chose to be poor, and that knucklehead never comes in for a checkup. Okay, all right, that's good enough. And members of the day are Felton Lewis and Jennifer Telesco. They power the show overall, and they get the whole show commercial free, on demand, and extra content like our post game today is with Gigi, Irma, Asher, Tim, Frisch, Steve-O. It's an extravaganza. Wow, yeah. They talk about dress codes at work. I didn't know we had one. And get a load of this.
We don't have one.
Armenian moonshine. Mm.
I don't even know what that is.
Okay, well, apparently Gigi does. We got to talk to her about it. So that's at tytnetwork.com/join. If you join, you help the show. You get all those things on the top.
Yeah, look who's on for the moonshine thing.
Oh, Irma, of course. Irma made us drink moonshine on a recent episode of Old School.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Smuggled in from
Cape Verde.
Cape Verde,
and Haiti.
And Haiti.
Oh, we had Haitian moonshine. And live to tell the story.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. We are brave. All right. One more thing, guys. The donors for tytnetwork.com/go. I got to read your names real quick. $50 from David in Texas. $50 from Dominique in Georgia. And then $250 from Joyce in California. Thank you, guys.
Nice.
Can I see it? Did we get to 1.4? Inconceivable? No, we didn't. That's okay. God bless.
We'll get there.
Every dollar matters.
This weekend. It's falling this weekend.
Oh, yeah. Okay, Casper, what's next?
All right. The BBC was recently interviewing a political scientist named Robert Kelly, and I'm sure a lot of you have already seen this insanely good viral video of the interview where the political scientist gets interrupted in the best possible way. Now they're talking about South Korea's president and how that president is likely to get impeached. And so it's a serious topic, but hilarity ensues. So take a look.
Scandals happen all the time. The question is, how do democracies respond to those scandals?
And what will it mean for the wider region? I think one of your children has just walked in. I mean, shifting sands in the region. Do you think relations with the North may change?
I would be surprised if they do. My apologies.
What is this going to be for the region?
My apologies. South Korea's policy choices on North Korea have been severely limited in the last 6 months to a year because.
It's really good. The mush.
So listen, I have done many live videos on YouTube, Facebook, etc. And every once in a while, one of my kids sneaks in, like, you gotta roll with it, son. You gotta roll with it.
Totally.
Don't push your kid on live TV. That's a bad idea. And people keep saying wife or nanny. Okay, I mean, it looked like she was being paid to take care of the kids and panicked that she didn't. I'm guessing, but I don't know. Okay, so she's like, oh no,
Yeah, you don't imagine the wife on the floor reaching back in to close the door.
But
you don't know, who knows?
I feel like if the wife walked in, she'd be like,
exactly.
What am I going to do?
Exactly.
I told you not to do the BBC interview in the house.
Exactly.
Oh man, a home office. That was just, it was so priceless to me. And I felt bad because you know the guy's going to get some crap, and I'm sure he already has.
Yeah.
For the hand to the face.
That was a real dad response, though.
It was gentle. He said, He said, this will be fine. You're going to have to.
What stood out to me, other than the fact that it was hilarious and fun to watch, was just how happy and look at his daughter.
Yeah,
she hasn't been hit hard by the reality of life yet, right?
No, she's happy. I'm still right about there.
Yeah. having a good time, eating something.
The beginning of it has totally gone viral. Everybody is saying, like,
the mad dash. I love that a dad is getting interrupted by children at work. Usually, like, it's moms. Yeah, so this is just a little gender equality here.
She's got no shoes on, right?
It looks like a Benny Hill episode.
But the beginning of it with that first kid, we just roll the beginning again just to see the first kid come in, because that first kid comes in like they're not a care in the world.
Yeah.
Like whatever. Like everybody's on Twitter like, I'm gonna walk like dum.
It's so perfect. Yeah. Hey, Dad, what you doing? What's going on?
Yeah,
because they don't know he's on TV. Right. They don't know what that means.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, Here we go again.
The best. Okay. I love. Yeah, I suspect that actually, when in calmer times, that's like probably a pretty great family.
I hope they're having a good laugh over.
Yeah. Yeah.
Next time, put the kid on your lap, roll with it, and just go, probably the South Korean leader is going to be impeached, and don't you agree, honey?
Good stuff.
Ironically, the South Korean leader wound up exiting the same way that the nanny did. Oh, no.
All right, finally, orgasms.
Oh, thanks, Scott.
There is mounting evidence and studies regarding the so-called orgasm gap between men and women. And recent data indicates that, unfortunately, 40% of women experience sexual dysfunction associated with a chronic difficulty in achieving orgasm. But things are very different for men. Okay, according to these studies, all groups of men, gay, bisexual, heterosexual, doesn't matter what their sexuality is, orgasm more than all groups of women. It is important to mention, though, that lesbians usually have an easier time orgasming than straight women, which is the most unsurprising thing that I've ever heard in my entire life. So,
yeah. Well, there's two aspects to that, right? So the heart of this story focuses on anatomy. And if your anatomy is structured in a certain way, you're less likely to orgasm. It isn't him, it isn't you, and what you're doing wrong. It's just likely your anatomy. But the lesbian partners kind of disprove that a little. They don't disprove it, but it lets you know there are certainly other factors, which is that if you're more familiar with the female body or you care more to find out, you'll be able to please her, because the lesbian couples don't have different anatomy at a different rate than straight couples do. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's not like you have the anatomy and therefore you are or aren't lesbian, right?
Yeah, those are two totally separate factors. So even with the same percentage of anatomy being different within women and within couples, lesbians do wind up orgasming more. So that seems like that's a little bit of more of their partner put more effort into it.
The focus is then orgasm when it's two women. When it's men, it's another word for you. It's an androcentric model of sex, which means male-centered, right? Which focuses on the male orgasm. So you come in, and if you get it, then you get it. If you don't, then whatever. I got mine. So I think with lesbian women, the focus is pleasing your partner, whereas with men, that may not be the focus all the time.
But to be fair to men now, to be more andro-something-something.
Yeah.
Okay. You have to understand why men are frustrated, because 40% of women have trouble orgasming. So they think like, And remember, people can't escape their own perspective. So I bet you a lot of men, and a lot of men don't, but a lot of men probably think like, what's the big deal? I came, why can't you, like, oh, this is such a pain in the ass. Why do I have to keep like, oh, trying all this stuff? And then so they, at a certain percentage of them get frustrated and go, ah, I did the best I could.
Go ahead. Yeah, I think that there are so many different factors at play, right? Mm-hmm. So there are biological factors, or at least physical factors, and there's certain ways that some women's anatomy helps them achieve orgasms easily as opposed to other women, and that has to do with, you know, where the clitoris is, how large the clitoris is, all of that actually does play a role. But there's also the component of how arousal for women is just as important mentally as it is physically, right? So you have to be in the right place mentally for a lot of women. So if you're self-conscious, if you're not in the mood to have sex, that could really impact whether or not you will climax, mm-hmm. right? And so there was another really great point made by a psychology assistant professor, David Frederick. And he says women have a higher body dissatisfaction than men, and it interferes with their sex life more. This can impact sexual satisfaction and ability to orgasm if people are focusing more on these concerns than on the sexual experience. So it could be that they're insecure about their bodies, or it could be that, you know, they're worried about being perceived a certain way in the bedroom because of societal pressures to be a good girl and this and that. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying?
All of that relates to your overall point about
the headspace
needs to be there, but that's true for men too.
Mm-hmm.
That's not.
I was going to say, what part of that is?
There aren't a lot of men who are like, okay, I'm about to orgasm. On the other hand, I'm unattractive. Hey, if I'm about to orgasm, that's pretty much the only thing on my mind. And hey, if I was unattractive and I did it anyway, score.
Yeah. For the men who are frustrated that you know their partners can't achieve orgasm via sex, you gotta try other modes of stimulation. And I think that's also what the article is arguing, is that if it doesn't come from, you know, vaginal intercourse, then you gotta, you know,
stimulate the clitoris.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, okay, let me explain that, because I think there's two super interesting things we haven't even discussed here yet. So to Ambria's point, here's what one of the researchers said. We found that the distance between the clitoris mm-hmm. and the urinary opening, which is called, this is unbelievable, cummed. Okay, I'm not kidding, C-U-M-D, okay.
Why'd you make that face?
Okay, which is called cummed, indicates whether or not a woman is inclined to have an orgasm with intercourse or not. Mm-hmm. If it's below 2 centimeters, then she likely is going to have an orgasm with intercourse, okay? So, okay, I don't know what happened there, but that was a funny female moment when I'm like, oh, 2 centimeters, you know what I'm saying? Okay, anyway, something as obscure and that you probably never even thought of, not likely, of course you never thought of it, the relationship of your clitoris to your urinary opening, that apparently makes all the difference in the world. And so,
and I remember a while ago, you and I actually talked about a study that talked about the size of a woman's clitoris, right? Mm-hmm. And so the study found that there is a significant correlation between a larger clitoris and whether or not a woman can orgasm. She has an easier time orgasming as a result. But what the researchers couldn't figure out was whether or not it was a cause or effect thing. Like, they couldn't mm-hmm. figure out if it was because you orgasm so much, it somehow has an impact on the size of your clitoris, or if you just have a large clitoris. Yeah. I don't know.
Seems unlikely, but okay.
It was interesting.
Yeah. No matter what, it debunks this idea that men come to you with, you know, oh, the size of mine is gonna. It's like, no, actually, it's the size of mine.
Yeah.
That matters in this
literally.
Situation. Yeah.
That's right. And so, by the way, if it's not within 2 inches, the clitoris to the urinary opening, then they say, you know, what you might have to do is manually stimulate the clitoris during sex.
Mm-hmm.
So try a little harder is the bottom line to that. So, and by the way, some women still don't orgasm, and that's mm-hmm. and you've got a whole range. So, right. And if that's that, at the end of the day, that's your situation, don't beat yourself up over it. It might simply be a matter of anatomy, but give it a real college try first, okay? And then finally, I found this super interesting because it has something to do with evolution. So apparently our ancestors used to more easily cause ovulation, or used to cause ovulation. And now, not Homo sapiens, but our ancestors mm-hmm. of humans overall. And so there was a point to the female orgasm, a biological, evolutionary point to it. Now it doesn't. Now it is on a menstrual cycle, obviously.
Yeah.
So it might be that we are in mid-evolution. And since we're humans, we got stuck here. Like, there is no more evolution going on because we have manipulated our environment until our environment fights back with the ozone layer being depleted. Yeah. But anyway, for the moment
being.
But maybe
that's a good thing, because if you're not going to be able to orgasm at all in the future as like a human race, as females, like what's the point of living?
There's already so much inequality. Yeah. Like, yeah. I can't endure it without being able to have an orgasm. And that's not fair.
And I'm positive that I'm oversimplifying. All the scientists out there will yell at me. But the bottom line is, it might be that some women, hence, are more likely to orgasm because of the way that humans have evolved, and some are not. And so, again, it still leads to the same conclusion, which is give it your best shot, but then don't beat yourself up too much if you're a woman or a man, mm-hmm. if there's just some anatomical things you can't get past.
Yep.
All right. On that hopeful note, no?
Ben's like shockingly quiet on this topic.
There was a lot of good news in this article.
Okay, I got it. All right, guys. So to watch the post game, where apparently there's Armenian moonshine, tytnetwork.com/join.
What I was debating, and why I was mostly silent, one of was obvious reasons for being silent. I just didn't sense an upside. But I have the world's greatest orgasm joke. Which I will not tell on the regular air. I will share with these good people afterwards, but on a post-game show sometime.
Yes.
I will share what is literally the world's greatest orgasm joke and the world's greatest Jewish joke. All rolled into one.
Wow. TYTnetwork.com/join.
Come on.
Okay. All right. Myself. All right. Here we go.
Oh, I don't know.
We go bye-bye.
Okay.
You don't have to do it.
One, two, three.
Bye-bye.